This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. Hope you're well.
Boker Tov, quite a week, but let's sort of divert our attention a little bit for a moment. I don't know how many of the listeners realize that rugby is actually played in Israel, even though it's a game that seems to be quite focused on the immigrant community, those people who come from countries where rugby is a popular sport, New Zealand, South Africa, Australia, England, countries like that, France. But here's a little interesting piece of information that there was a recently tournament for rugby sevens that was held, a conference tournament. The European conference tournament was held in Andorra, and the Israeli men's sevens team actually won the gold medal at the tournament, which comes as a surprise to many people. And not only that, but the women's team actually managed to get the bronze medal in that tournament. So even though it's not necessarily the very highest level of rugby, but it does show an element of seriousness about playing. People are take it very, very seriously. Kibbutz Yisrael in the Jezreel Valley is one of the places that's considered to be the heart of Israeli rugby. Many people who settled on that kibbutz came from countries where rugby was popular, and that kibbutz has a certain rugby culture about it, which is incredible. When you go there and you experience it. Just another little snippet is that we discussed earlier in the week this issue of the women's tank unit in the IDF and how that's been very controversial, introducing women pilots to tank crews. The IDF Chief of General Staff, Eyal Zamir, has come out making a comment about this. And he said that there will be a pilot program to try out women serving in the tank units, and this will begin in November. And from what I can gather, the units will be all women crews. So it's not intended to mix the crews up. He also said that the pilot will be a relatively small number of people, that there will be a few companies, a single company, not a few, but a single company of tank crews, which relatively speaking is a very, very small number when you compare it to the number of tank crews that are out there. It's still highly controversial. He also added that in the past pilot programs, there'd been quite a number of injuries that the women had sustained during the training process. And so the idea, of course, is that the girls are expected to be as good as the boys in terms of their physical abilities, in terms of their knowledge and their driving skills and whatever it is. They're expected to be just as good as the boys, and therefore they will be put through the same training as the boys are put through. And there are times when not all of the girls are up to this training. Of course, this comment also solicited quite a number of comments from people who are supportive of the idea of equality for women in the IDF. Pro-women groups have come out saying that this pilot should be expanded and that girls should be given the same opportunity as the boys. And we know that the Hesder Yeshiva movement has come out very, very concerned. But I think the idea of an all-women crew seems logical, gives the girls the opportunity to get involved in the tanks. It doesn't mix it up with the boys to create all kinds of other problems and controversies. So we'll see. I mean, this is due to be introduced in November, so there's a little time yet before we see it coming out in reality, and we'll keep a watch on it to see how that goes.
At least it does seem to me to be somewhat of an more elegant solution. President Trump has been critical of Israel and Prime Minister Netanyahu in his comments at the G7. Has anything actually changed in the relationship here?
Well, I'm going to try and involve the listeners here as well, because there's a lot of opinion about exactly what's going on. And what on the one hand, you know, when President Trump was behaving in a way that was really aligned to Israel's interests and was willing to attack Iran, which from an Israeli point of view was welcome, because Iran was this very, very threatening entity, something of a black box where we didn't really know how we would stack up against them if they would actualize the threats that they continuously issued and continue to issue against Israel. I mean, you know, one shouldn't underestimate the significance and the impact of Iran as this kind of beastly organization which goes out and uses every public opportunity to threaten Israel, to claim that Israel has no right to exist. And we've got to live under that shadow, knowing that there is this country out there which has a huge amount of economic power due to the oil that they sell. And they continuously threaten us. Not only that, but in reality, we know that they've carried out terror attacks against Jewish targets around the world. And we also know that they are funding proxy armies attempting to attack and destroy the state of Israel. So that's the situation that we find ourselves in. And then we have this huge ally, which is the United States, with massive firepower coming out saying, we'll come with you and we will attack these guys and we will try to break a hole into this aura, into the screen that is set up, where we don't really know how we would stack up if we had to come face to face with this beast. And so when Trump came out threatening Iran and willing to attack Iran and support Israel in attacking Iran, Israelis found that welcome, because it all of a sudden put a little bit more clarity around something which was, I suppose, the fear of the unknown. There was a lot unknown. We didn't really understand the strength of Iran and what the, you know, how those threats might actually come about if Iran decided to act upon it. So at that moment, Israel felt well supported and we were well aligned and very, very, you know, happy that someone like Trump was willing to come up and do all of this. Now Trump is turning and he is quite, well, some of the comments that he made were a little shameful, really. You know, Israel is just a very, very small partner. I mean, you know, we like
junior
Israel
partner,
and they've done,
yeah. Crazy.
I mean, he used the word very, very small. You know, like, you know, we like Israel and they've done a great job and they really support us, but they're a very small partner. Now, I mean, that's kind of somewhat disparaging. And he then went on to talk about Prime Minister Netanyahu in terms of what he's been doing in Lebanon. You know, I told Bibi he was very critical about he thinks that we should be a little less aggressive in the work that we're doing in Lebanon right now. And he spoke about a little drone that dropped in the middle of the desert and that didn't threaten anybody and that didn't warrant an attack on Beirut. I mean, these are kind of public comments that are being made which really don't reflect the reality of the situation. I mean, once again, we have, unfortunately, an IDF soldier who was killed yesterday by one of these explosive drones, Master Sergeant Alexander Filin, who was a reserve soldier, 29 years old, and he was killed and seven others were injured in various stages of injury, some of them more seriously than others, by an explosive drone that dropped down near IDF soldiers operating within Lebanon. And then President Trump comes out saying, well, it's a little drone that drops in the desert. It didn't hurt anybody. Why would you attack Beirut? Well, the answer, President Trump, is that if you had explosive drones coming across your border and dropping supposedly harmlessly in the desert, but you knew full well that that particular threat continued to exist and that if you didn't respond to it, that your enemies would continue to try to fire at you until you do finally sustain damage or injury, until you are forced into a war, then you would say, look, I'm not willing to put up with even one iota of this attack, of this threat, even if the drones are falling supposedly harmlessly in the desert, even though we've had dozens of people who've been killed already over the last few months by these explosive drones. There's nothing harmless about them. And the fact that some of them happen to drop into the desert is by chance. It's not something that will continue. And the less you respond to that, the more you're inviting future attacks to take place. So that doesn't seem to make sense. So I think that some of the comments that he made were kind of really lacking in showing the full extent of what's going on when your country is under threat from an entity like Hezbollah, and when your big partner is just about to give millions of dollars to the country that is the sponsor of this enemy, Hezbollah, because at the moment we're expecting that as a result of the release of the sanctions and as a result of the release of freeze of Iranian funds, that Hezbollah is going to get a massive bonus day within the next few weeks from this money that will come from Iran that has been unfrozen, and Israel will become the victim. So we can't stand back and just watch this happen. And I think that the way that President Trump presented things is a little kind of shallow and a little disparaging and does not reflect the reality. It's interesting that he invoked quite a number of times the attack that the United States carried out against Soleimani, where they were successful in eliminating him. And now we can sort of understand the background a little bit. Apparently, Israel was lined up to help the United States carry out this particular attack until even the night before, when Israel decided, for whatever reason, to drop out of it. The United States decided to proceed with the attack, and they were successful. So now that that attack was carried out successfully and Israel apparently dropped out of participating, this very, very small partner that we were talking about a few moments ago, but dropped out of this attack, he seems to be somewhat critical of Prime Minister Netanyahu's decision to drop out of that. We don't know what the background is, but that particular matter was invoked quite a number of times. And then he just says, you know, things which are supposed to sound very nice, but really don't. Bibi Netanyahu happens to be a good man, but he gets a little excited sometimes, calling him an amazing prime minister. So I don't really know. He said, we have a little dispute over Lebanon. I say you can do it a little softer touch, Bibi. You don't have to knock down a building every time somebody walks into it that's from Hezbollah. Well, I'm sorry, President Trump, we do have to knock down a building every time somebody walks into it from Hezbollah, because those buildings are booby-trapped, and those people from Hezbollah who walk into those buildings, we can't afford to let them go. So if it means that we have to destroy a building, then that's unfortunately the way that things work out, because those buildings anyway are used for weapon storage and are booby-trapped in order to try and trap our soldiers there. So there is a lot that remains unsaid in these very simplistic comments that are being made. They're unhelpful. And I think ultimately, with the benefit of some hindsight, we will learn a little bit more about it. But what do the listeners think? Do the listeners agree that it all seems a little bit heavy-handed in Lebanon right now? Is this the impression that is being given from to the outside world, that we could do it a little softer touch?
So, Anthony, one of the ideas that we spoke about earlier, or that I presented, was that Trump, clearly it's like those puppet shows when you've got the good guy, but the bad guy's looming behind and we're all screaming, he's bad. And we assume that, obviously, nobody knows what we know because we can see it. We have to know that Trump knows what Iran is. He's got the intelligence, he's got the experience, he's got everything. When I spoke to Mark Zell from Republican Party earlier, he said it's really all about pressing pause because of the midterms. And in a way, if you extrapolate that, you can see Trump's frustration with Netanyahu, because he's saying, I get it that you've got to deal with Hezbollah, just don't do anything to mess up this pause button. We need to press pause. Nobody takes this. You can't take this agreement seriously because it isn't even an agreement. So maybe what Trump is trying to communicate but can't, because he can't say it publicly, is just hold on. The other things, we've got to open the strait. That's the priority right now. But this ultimately, we know how big a deal this is. Your thoughts?
Well, Trump is clearly talking to his own electorate right now. He's clearly trying to create a better economic situation in the United States ahead of the midterms, or maybe not even related to the midterms, but in general, that he is really trying to improve economics in the United States, and he knows that the oil price is a major factor. That's the first point. The second point is that it seems as if, though, the U.S. population, the U.S. general public, are not particularly supportive of this war, not particularly supportive of Israel. And he seems to be speaking to them when he says, well, Israel's the small partner and Bibi is a good man, but he gets a little excited sometimes, to try and, you know, speak the language of the US general public, the high street in the United States. I think that that's certainly the case. The problem is that whenever you speak to a certain population group, whenever you direct your comments in one direction, everybody's listening and everybody's taking it the way that they want to take it. And the Israeli public are listening, and the Europeans are listening, and the Israeli leadership are listening, and Israel's heading into an election. And I'm not sure that these comments and these events are particularly helpful to Prime Minister Netanyahu in his attempt to get re-elected later this year. I think that this is potentially damaging to him personally and to the Likud because of what's happening right now, where the general public in Israel are not supportive of this. So there are, of course, people who will benefit from these comments and who will take them and like them. And then there will be casualties. And unfortunately, at the moment, I think Israel is one of the casualties.
That is where we do need to leave it. But this is a story that is yet to still be told. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. Thank you again for a week of very, very insightful reporting and discussion over a very, very complicated situation. Wishing you a fantastic weekend and a Shabbat Shalom. It is 8 o'clock. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.